pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, November 4th, 2019. It's MLS Cup Week, but if you're listening to us live on Twitter, make sure you follow us right here, right now. You're listening to us on YouTube. Click that subscribe button. That really does help us a lot. MLS Cup Week starts today, and we'll have a whole lot of special coverage this week for MLS Cup. And you know, Dwayne, I was looking at all the games and all the special things happening in the world of sports this weekend. Wow, what a weekend of sports that is coming on November 9th and 10th, especially in the world of soccer.
No, precisely. The Liverpool City on Sunday as well. It's going to be one hell of an appetizer before MLS Cup for me anyway. I'm sure a lot of people will factor that into their afternoon of viewing here, because it is, even if you're not a partisan to either of those two teams, a big game, obviously. It's weird though, Kevin. It's such a different experience, MLS Cup, this time than the last two I was at, because the last two, by the time Monday was rolling around, you were starting to figure out all of the daily activities in the city you're in. And, you know, I know you traveled in, so you probably would have a similar experience to what those in Toronto that are TFC fans are now. But the vast majority of TFC fans, it's going to be a different, like, you know, we're going to watch this at the pub, we're going to have people over. It's a different kind of gig, and it's kind of a different way to approach it.
It's kind of like watching it at a neutral site where you don't travel and you just stay home. But this time it's going to be in Seattle with 69,000 fans on Sunday.
And 3,000 tickets were allocated to the TFC fans. They are mostly sold out now as well. I mean, in a way, it's a long way away from Seattle. It's very expensive for people to travel. The average flight people were getting was coming in at around $1,000 return, which is a significant investment for most fans, I think. You know, when you're looking at South End fans only pay, what, $400 for their season tickets? Yeah. they pay double that for a flight. Like, you know, it's a lot.
And that's without hotel accommodations, without eating, and without celebrating or drinking your sorrows away. So both should be included in the budget.
Exactly. And it is fortunate, though, that there is a significant expat population. I guess you'd say it like Toronto's a country. There's a significant amount of Toronto people that have moved out west that retain their Toronto sports fandom that will probably make the travel down from Vancouver or Edmonton, Calgary, places like that. So the 3,000 should be sold. That's a good balance, I think. It's unfortunate that the away section there is way up top. But
They're not going to give you, like, sideline seats, you know? They're going to put you at the furthest way possible. It's normal. But go ahead.
I was going to say, they're lucky. I mean, I saw firsthand. Like, I was knee-deep into the supporter stuff in 2016, the first, I was living with it, essentially. And, the work that had to go into figuring out how to get tickets to everyone that needed them. And that was just at a home game. And there were so many corporate seats that when you're in a stadium the size of BMO then, which was 32,000 that final, it's really, really hard to accommodate people. I think they only had about 1,500 away tickets then. And that was another thing. You had to displace people to give them those tickets, right? Yeah. So good work on Seattle to open it up and get that out. They're lucky they have the NFL stadium, which makes it a lot easier for them. But, you know, I'm sure, even that said, they are making a sacrifice by giving TFC, you know, more than what they kind of have in the past, but I think it does add to the experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and we'll have a lot more on MLS Cup all week long here on Soccer Today. It's MLS Cup week, and even during the weekend, because it's in Seattle, and we're not able to travel this year to MLS Cup. Next year is another year, and I pledge to be at MLS Cup next year, and also the draft with our full-time capacities coming next month, which we've talked about before, and you'll learn a lot more in the month of November. Probably in 2 weeks we'll have the full announcement of the setup of the future of SPN, but until then, next year I will be there. But this week, Dwayne, we'll have a lot of in-studio shows, special coverage I can do out of the blue, special bonus shows. There's a press conference later on today, MLS in LA. There's Dodgers representative. We'll see What happens in Seattle, this press conference, major announcement, supposedly, today with MLS, and we'll have more on tomorrow's show. And if it's big enough, we'll have a special show later today. But Dwayne, also next weekend, it's Der Klassiker. It is Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich. And Bayern Munich is going to have an interim manager, a caretaker, because Niko Kovac got sacked, or they mutually agreed that he should leave. That's what we usually say. Bayern Munich fired their manager after losing 5-1 to Eintracht Frankfurt in the weekend.
Yeah, when you're the manager of a club the size of Bayern Munich and you lose, and you're not at the top of the table, you're in the middle of the table in November and you've just lost 5-1 to Frankfurt, who is a decent but mid-table side. They were below them in the standings heading into the game. If you lose that, if you're Niko Kovac, you fall on your sword. Like, that's the noble thing to do. You walk into the office and say, I'll leave if you want to. And in this case, they went, yes, we do. And it's, look, there's so much pressure in those roles. And there's so much need, even in what is clearly a transition season for Bayern, they need to have more of a direction than he was providing in the last weeks. The talent level, I watch a lot of Bundesliga this year. I haven't been. It's a highly entertaining league right now. And part of that's because Bayern is not so dominant. It's not just because the title race is better. It's just made everyone sort of, I think, rise their game up thinking that they had a chance, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, when you got Gladbach winning or leading the league in November, that's, what is this, 1972?
Rob, you know, where's our friend Rob Friend? He's I wish I was playing right now. I would be top of the Bundesliga. But no, exactly.
Yeah, so it's been a fun league in the Bundesliga. And if you haven't had a chance to watch it, I recommend taking it. It's a very fast, athletic game. If you're a fan of the English league, I think you will transition into Bundesliga closely. Of the big five leagues, I would suggest it's the closest in style to England. So, look, what we're worried about, of course, here in Canada is what does this mean for Alphonso Davies? Now, what I will say is that Kovac was not the person who bought Davies. He was the first manager. He always spoke highly of him. He clearly was high on his talent ceiling. But ultimately, the decision to bring him into the club was not his. So this is not a case of like young player that was like a pet project of the player then gets left behind. That's like, you know, when Daniel Henry went to West Ham, that was what happened.
True.
Manager that brought him in saw some diamond in the rough stuff and wanted to work through it.
Wonder what that manager saw, but yes, go ahead.
Well, he's a very athletic player. Like, I mean, if you watch Daniel close up a lot, he is. Kidding. But if they figured they could like work the rough edges out of his game, but then as soon as he left, no one had that same belief in him. He didn't get the work that he needed to get there, right? So this is not quite, I mean, that's a bad example. The only really good example part of that is a player that our listeners will know. I'm not overly concerned. In fact, I could argue that it might be a positive development for Alphonso Davies, that they might have a new manager come in and get the agreement of the board because the season has started so poorly. And if you're coming in as a new manager in the middle of the year to turn things around, you might not be expected to do the same things that Kovac was expected to do at the start of the year. They may say, you know what? As long as you can build us a foundation that allows us to thrive and move forward in the way that Bayern Munich should be in their mind next year, then you can play some kids this year. So I would argue that he might get a bigger look, that they might go younger in the days ahead because of the burden of trying to keep this person's job, right? Like they have a rope. They're more willing to experiment. They're more willing to try these things out, and they're more willing to give, speaking of rope, to give the players rope to use it to, you know, pull in their opportunity or hang themselves. And that's all we can really hope for.
That's true. But we'll get to the potential replacement of Niko Kovac in a second. Have a little slideshow for our video viewers, and I have a few names on my notes that I want to swing by you. But before we get there, there's an article that you can find on, it's on a few different places, but it's from The Bild, which is a German newspaper, not fully gossipy, but not fully New York Times either, somewhere in the middle. They have an interesting account of what maybe was the last video session of Niko Kovac with Bayern Munich. And it does give us a window into the locker room and his relationship with the players. And apparently, this has not been a smooth relationship for the last at least few months, like it's mentioned here. But here is an excerpt of that article that you can find on a few different outlets from The Bild. According to Bild's version of events, Kovac spoke to the team for 20 minutes, critiquing each of them by name. Some tidbits include to Serge Gnabry, "You lose the ball too easily." This one to Kingsley Coman, "You stand there and Thomas fights," i.e. Coman stand around while Thomas Müller never gives up. To Thiago, "You shouldn't do magic. Keep it simple. No tricks that lead to turnovers." To Jerome Boateng about the red card, "You have to go into that situation much more cleverly." He was generally displeased with the defense. According to Bill, the players looked dumbfounded at the floor during the personal criticism, which conjures the mental of a group of kids being told off by their teacher in middle of school. Kovac continued, "You don't listen. We discuss and practice things and you don't apply them." That's the key phrase here. Maybe Kovac lost his locker room, or at least the trust of his players, a few months ago.
Here's the thing. I hear that account, and it's possible to be both right and wrong at the same time. He's probably correct. They probably weren't listening. He's absolutely correct that Boateng should have went into the situation more cleverly. I was watching the game. He's probably right that they weren't defending very well in that game. They allowed 5 goals. Yes, they were down to 10 men because of an idiotic decision early. But nonetheless, if you're Bayern Munich, you should have enough talent to at least keep that respectable, right? So he's absolutely probably right in his criticism. Where he's wrong at is misunderstanding how to manage this current generation of players. And that's not, you know, Gen X Dwayne screaming at the clouds about you damn millennials.
No, it's the other way around. You're actually applauding millennials and finding a way to communicate with them for the old managers.
Yeah, that's what they have to do. They have to understand that that calling them out in public, which is the old hairdryer sort of phenomenal, the Alex Ferguson techniques, so to speak, or, you know, Mike Keenan, or
even Jose Mourinho. Does the same thing. Look at how he found a couple of scapegoats when he was in Man United and continue on piling on them. So, no, exactly.
Yeah, it's a technique that, you know, I grew up playing the game with coaches, even at a youth level, which would employ similar techniques then. And it just doesn't work anymore, really. I think a lot of people tune out to it really quickly. I mean, I tune out it as an adult. If my work boss, like my current work boss, is incredibly flexible. Tia and Christian, if you're listening, I really appreciate you. You're very flexible. You allow me to do things like take a half hour off a day to do a podcast. You're all good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's work-life balance, man. And look, it's a different situation in the world of professional footballers, but they do have to appreciate that they have the ultimate power, the manager does, in terms of whether they play or not. But really, the players are more powerful too.
Yeah, because cannot exchange. They invest a lot more in players than they do in coaches. So at the end of the day, they're going to change a coach before they change a couple players. Speaking of coaches, Dwayne, the potential replacement, that's where it's fascinating to me, because there's a lot of names being thrown around right now. A couple that come every time there's a big available job right now, Jose Mourinho's talked about, and Arsene Wenger by the bank. To me, those are flashy names, but they hide the potential of the true candidate out there. And the true candidate out there, they might have missed their window. Remember how we talked about Hoffenheim a few years ago and how Julian Nagelsmann was, 27-year-old, and he was the youngest manager in the Bundesliga and making this team a top-10 team in the Bundesliga with bottom 15 budget. Now he is the manager of RB Leipzig, and they're doing really well, so I doubt that Munich will be able to get him right now. But here are the names that I think actually make sense. Erik ten Hag of Ajax is a potential. Ralf Rangnick, who's actually now working for New York Red Bulls and the actual Red Bull soccer or organization, the entire umbrella, as the head of international relationship and scouting, and Massimiliano Allegri, and maybe Wenger, but those three names are my top candidate. Erik ten Hag, Ralf Rangnick, and Massimiliano Allegri, former boss of Juventus.
Yeah, look, the situation at Bayern is complicated by the fact that their president is leaving, an older gentleman, his name's escaped me right now, but he's leaving at the end of this season, and that is, there's a lot of power in those positions there. They're elected. Bayern is such a huge club, but there's a lot of politics that go into even the naming of a manager. So in terms of I think they'll take their time with it because of that. I think they'll try and have an understanding that they want to bring someone in that the new president's going to be happy with too. So it wouldn't shock me if they go interim the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Your name, Wenger, you mentioned. Like, I don't know if...
I was going to say the name of the president who's leaving is Ulay Eneb, if I'm not mistaking this pronunciation, of his difficult German name.
Yeah, he served time in jail and still managed to keep the presidency. Figure that one out. At any rate, it was for tax evasion, in case you're... I bet you're shocked by that a rich old white guy would spend time in jail with tax evasion. Speaking of the boomers. Anyway, where was I going with this? Yes, you mentioned Wenger. I think that's an interesting idea for a very short-term kind of appointment. I wonder if you could get like an elder statesman to come in to steady the ship for a year and then allow the new president to be part of an active long-term application. And you look at a manager like Wenger, who's of an advanced age.
Maybe he will be the next president. Maybe you name him president and manager for now, and next year he just gets the president's job and continues. Yep.
Yeah, the president's elected official. That you have to go through the whole thing. There's a lot of politicking that goes on. It would be the long-term Byron person. But in terms of like the ability to steady the ship, it wouldn't shock me. But even beyond that, like forget names. Just the idea is, I think that they're not going to want to rush to it. They'll want to appoint an interim and go from there. Like really, I mean, it's all is not lost. Byron could still win the title in Germany. Yeah. Hell, they could still win the Champions League if they got hot at the right time of the year. But
exactly. But speaking of the Champions League, they are playing this week. They are playing against Olympiakos on... let me just get it here. I think it's on Tuesday. Here it is. It is on Wednesday. Bayern Munich, Olympiakos at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And then this weekend, they're playing Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga. And the Bundesliga title you mentioned earlier, the table is fascinating. Mönchengladbach first with 22 points, Dortmund second, 19 points, RB Leipzig 18, and Bayern Munich fourth with 18. But you got Freiburg tied on points as well with 18 in fifth, and Schalke tied on point on sixth with 18. And then Frankfurt and Wolfsburg and Hoffenheim are tied at 17 from 1 to 19. There's 4-5 points difference. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's a very competitive league. I mean, those that like... people sometimes think that I don't like close leagues because I rant against parity. I'm fine with close leagues. I hate forced parity. This is quite naturally organic parity, which is the same as Liga MX. Well, sort of. Everything's not unnatural nowadays because of financial situations. But nonetheless, it has been a lot of fun to watch the German leagues, and I recommend it. But yeah. I don't know, coach bump. We talked about this a lot in the MLS sides. There's not really anything real there, but we'll see how this plays out. I think if you're a Canadian listening to this, you should probably relax and let it play out. I do not think that this is going to affect Alphonso Davies that much. This is a kid, I know that as Canadians, we're still reluctant to completely buy into the idea that this kid is a life, like career long until the end, top 10 club in the world player. He is. These teams don't make charity. Like, he's not.
They don't make mistakes.
They
don't make that big of mistakes, right?
Yeah, and if they do, they get rid of them quick.
Yeah,
and he's still there. The fact that he's been started the last three games, you know, albeit there's a bit of a rotation happening there. He played one of them was a club cup game as well. But the fact that he has played, and not only did he play three games, he played two games at left back and one game at left wing. Although the left wing game got, of course, waylaid by the red card, so he sort of had to play a hybrid position after that. It's a sign that he's going to be just fine, and they're going to keep playing him. In fact, and beyond that, too, if you look statistically, you know, if you're anti-stats, plug your ears for a half second here. But if you look at the numbers, like his blocks and his interceptions and his passing percentage and all that sort of stuff, he was right up there amongst the best performers for Bayern Munich in the Frankfurt game, which is, you know, not that great of an accomplishment when you lose 5-1, but it's still, if you're going to be in those games as a player playing the whole 90, you want to be at least on the top of the stat sheet.
Yeah, and he wasn't one of the players singled out by Kovac or by the media as well. I've used Google Translate a lot over the last couple of days, searching news from Munich and some news from their their journalism from their newspaper and especially the websites, and how they don't talk bad about Davies in these conversations. So he doesn't stand out in a wallop like this, which means that, well, it wasn't his fault, and he doesn't have that stigma on him going forward, right? If he creates a bad mistakes and he leads to the second goal, which would become the game-winning goal for Eintracht Frankfurt, there's a stigma, and it might stick to him. Right now, he's the exact opposite. The stigma's on Coman, which he's trying to get the job of.
Precisely, yeah.
On that
fair
note,
enough, yeah, no, I was going to say, you know, before we segue out of this, if you've tuned into us today expecting us to be all TFC all the time, first off, we're not a TFC show. That's just me being TFC. And second off, the rest of the week is going to be a lot of MLS Cup. So don't worry, you're going to get all of that stuff coming up soon. But we wanted to focus kind of on the rest of the story today because we know that the rest of the week is going to be a little MLS Cup focused.
Yes, a lot MLS Cup focused. We'll take a quick break and come back and talk about the Canadian Premier League, the CAN/PL finals on Saturday, and more on Soccer Today.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today, thanks to our sponsors. And you know, on this weekend, you're going to have the U Sports Final here in Montreal. I'll do my best to be there this weekend. It goes from November 7th to November 10th, and we'll have the Cape Breton Capers represented on the Atlantic University Sports Conference. Will be presented, so you can go to our archive at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork and listen to our interview with the manager of the Cape Breton Capers, Dino Morley, last week, and we'll have a lot more on the U Sports Championship on tomorrow's show. On the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, once again, go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. We're back, Dwayne. The Canadian Premier League finals wrapped up on Saturday. And just bear with me for a second while I put my camera and reach for my very own CAN/PL Trophy Challenge. Here we go. I got the plate. I'm a winner. I would like to thank my mother. I'd like to thank my father for being there and supporting me, to bringing me to practice every morning. We finally did it. We're the champions, baby.
I'm assuming, because I can't see the video feed right now, that you held up a microwave plate.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. that was quite funny on the weekend. For those who don't, you know, CPL champion or CPL Trophy Challenge was what the hashtag was. And it was mostly people holding up the microwave plates. If people could hold up your microwave plates as a replica of the trophy,
why not?
Maybe you made a mistake in the trophy. I thought the base was attached when I saw that coming out of the base. I was like, God, it's not even attached to the base.
No. Well, the base would have been full of champagne already.
Oh, my God. Anyway, let's pivot, guys. Yeah, I know you're all marketers, so you know what pivoting means. Pivot. Anyway, let's get to the game, though. We've talked about the trophy enough. Way too much has been talking about the trophy. I watched it with a viewing in Toronto, a very small, intimate group of folks. Although what I found interesting about that real quickly, and I think it is a little relevant, is that there was a table of York 9 fans that were showed up to this viewing, and they started to talk to me, and it became pretty clear pretty quickly that they didn't know who I was. And I'm not trying to say everyone should know who I am, but the fact that there's CAN/PL listeners out there that aren't hard in the Voyageurs world, aren't hard in the MLS TFC world in the city, because, you know, with all due respect, if you are, you probably have at least heard of me or hate me or something. So it gave me a reassurance that there's this like core of people that bubble up and find these games and find stuff, which tells us that we should make sure that we should give them the opportunity to do that. Which maybe that's where we should start then.
It
wasn't really an opportunity for people to do that.
Well, I guess I wasn't paying attention last week. I don't know. I guess I assume things sometimes. Maybe that's why. Because I know that the first game was on TV. I watched it on CBC Live, right, last weekend. So yeah, I'm not crazy. It was live from Hamilton, the first legs. I'm like, well, The first leg is live on CBC. The second leg has to be live as well on CBC. Why would you only show 50% of a game, 50% of a tournament final, 50% of a championship competition? It would never happen. No one would ever show, wait, it's not live last Saturday. I had to wait until midnight if I wanted to watch on my regular television. Of course, One Soccer did show the game live, but I was shocked. And I texted, we're like, wow, I wasn't paying attention. I guess the second leg is not on CBC.
I spent quite a bit of time trying to get some kind of comment or some kind of clarification on why it wasn't on CBC. Spoke to both people that I had contact with at CBC as well as at One Soccer. And the best I could come up with that someone sent me back is content isn't free. That was their succinct response to my question. Content isn't free. So you can draw your own conclusions there. My conclusion from that is that One Soccer offered it to CBC, but for a price. CBC decided that price was not worth investing in it. So obviously, I suspect, not obviously, but I suspect the first leg, CBCA required a certain degree of production assistant from One Soccer, which would have been cost prohibitive for them to provide in Calgary. And One Soccer.
You know, I'll go. Just finish on your thought and I'll go.
Yeah, I was going to say that. One Soccer probably, or CBC probably demanded that there be production support, and then it would have been cheaper in the GTA. And this isn't, I saw some people in Calgary go, oh, of course they showed the Ontario team. Well, yes, of course, but it's not for the reasons you're implying. It's, of course, because when all of your production equipment and everything else is an hour from the stadium as opposed to a flight from the stadium, then it's cheaper. And that's the blunt, harsh reality of it, but it's still unfortunate. And if they were going to invest in a game to get all non-over the top on CBC, then this was the one to do it in my mind. But that said, having said that, I don't know what the cost would have been. Like if we're talking about a $20,000-$30,000 more, then maybe that's a lot easier to say yes to than $1 million more, right?
Yeah, of course. But there's the cynical side of me who was like, okay, you tease the Lehman, okay? I'm going to use that expression. You tease a new fan by showing them the 50% of the final. Be like, all right, I want to know how it finishes. I'm going to choose. Oh, it's not there. Oh, I have to pay. So there, it's like the pre-portion of a pay-per-view live on TSN or something. Exactly. Let's use a UFC or boxing example. It's like the 8 to 10 prelims on TSN. So on CBC last week, it was the prelims, and now you're going to make me pay to watch the conclusion of what you started to show me on public television. The cynical people would see this as a move to up the subscription base of One Soccer, of course, which is a normal business practice in the world of pay-per-view entertainment or subscription-based content creation, like a Netflix or especially YouTube Premium example, where they'll give you the first show free, they'll try to hook you up, and then you have to pay to see the rest. Dwayne?
To use a really old business term. I'm hesitant to be overly critical here, and I'll tell you why. It's because I do have a lack of patience for those that bitch and moan and complain about having to spend anything for content.
Absolutely.
Content isn't free. And if you love Canadian soccer, you love the CAMPL, then you really shouldn't be complaining about $10 a month. It's worth it to you, in my mind, especially next year. I mean, and next year when those season tickets holders get it for free, I mean, they really have even less to complain about. But in this particular case, I do understand from a fledgling league that they should have probably had the championship determined on CBC to try and get more eyeballs for next year, to get more subs for next year. That's the business approach I would have taken. So I would have spent whatever extra amount of money they had. If they only could afford one leg, so be it. Show the last leg.
Yeah, that's true. And also, you know, Mr. Lopez, the CEO of MediaPro here in Canada, has mentioned that he thinks the possibility of having a 24-hour channel basically available for cable providers as One Soccer be available next year. So that would render all this discussions moot because you can just access One Soccer's 24-hour live feed on your television, like, example, the WWE Network, which they do have an over-the-top service. But in Canada, it's also a channel, the same feasibility could be used for One Soccer by MediaPro next year, and it has been alluded to by Mr. Lopez in comments over the last few days. So that would render all this discussion of watching the camp yell on regular television just moot.
Essentially, we'd have Gold TV is what it would be.
Pretty much, yeah, because we'd have the Chinese Super League, we'd have other... So yeah, that would be probably the best case scenario, I believe. And maybe that was the plan all along, and this year was just the soft launch, and the big hard launch will be with the 24-hour live channel available.
They're going to need a little more content, but yeah, I could see. It's funny. This is an in-between world. You know, I'm trying to think of this from a business perspective, what the justification for starting like Gold TV again, which is essentially what they're doing, because they have all right now, they have all these like sort of Campiel this week and so on and so forth, right? And they replay games all the time on the 24-hour loop you can get there. So if that's what it is, I mean, you know, your viewing numbers are going to be in the 50s, if that's sometimes the teens, sometimes, right? Well, so how do you get advertisers to buy into that?
With a live component, which you have to show live games, and not only in the Campiel, but also the positive that you could say for One Soccer is that some of the properties rights that they do own is a very different time schedule than the Campiel. So you can have live games in the morning, live games in the afternoon, and some live games if you go to an Australia league or something like that. You can have live games in the middle of the night. So then you just build your schedule around it. But it could be an idea that really ups the amount of subscription for One Soccer, of course, if they're available on television, but also to raise the profile of the league itself. And that will be a fascinating thing to continue to discuss. But congratulations to Forge. We still haven't mentioned that Forge are the champion. 2-0 on aggregate. 2-1 victories for Forge in the first leg. Tristan Borges scored in the second leg. David Chouanière at the 94th minute went on a breakaway to a Forge player with no defenders left. They were literally going all out cavalry trying to get the equalizer. David Chouanière scored on an empty net to make it 2-0 and to really seal the victory for Forge. Forge will forever be known as the first overall champion of the Canadian Premier League cavalry spring and fall champion.
Yeah, the one hidden, you know, gem of the fact that or one unfortunate thing about the final not being widely accessible is it was really not a great game. And it was really not a great game for a lot of factors. You know, Hamilton was managing it, as it should, from a tactical perspective, so you're not getting a lot of forward play from them. And the pitch was just god awful. And that's really no one's fault. This is November in Calgary, and exactly, the grass pitch that horses play on all the time, right? Like, it's you're in a horse field. You are literally playing a soccer game in a horse field in November in Calgary. This is not ideal, and it didn't lead to a lot of attractive play. And, you know, finals are always a little cagey anyway. I think to go back to what I was originally saying before we got a little waylaid there, the conversation I was having in the bar about the game was that Calgary really is a team that is set up more for a long play, a long grind, than they are for a one-off, because they don't have star power. They don't really have high-end game breakers in the same way that Calgary or that Hamilton did, really, and or like Borges and Becker are both players on a high offensive standard that I would take over anyone in Calgary. Calgary's got a lot of solid players, but if you're looking at the Campiel in general, and I think I'm probably on Two Salties this week, we'll go in a lot more detail about sort of the overall season, but when you're looking at the overall rosters, you can praise Calgary a lot, and I do, and I praise their system. But when I look at Cavalry itself right now, I would actually argue that they are among the lower, least likely teams to sell a lot of players on right now. They are one of the more likely teams to have a same team next year. You know, we already seen cots coming out, and there's like a lot of players getting thrown aside already. But yeah, I think Calgary will probably come back very similar, just a few tweaks here and there.
Calgary is looking for one or two addition, probably up top, to solidify their goal scoring capacities, and they'll be a contender for next year. Forge will have to work hard to keep their core of players. Who knows? Becker might get a shot again at MLS or somewhere else. Borges has a European dream that might come to fruition in the next few weeks. But let's finish today's show with this, Dwayne, and we'll continue the discussion on the whatever else we want to talk tomorrow, I guess. Sam Kerr leaving the NWSL, Liverpool City on Sunday. But let's finish with this. Tristan Borges, Canadian Premier League Golden Boot in year one with 13 goals, yeah, and maybe the overall best player, maybe even the MVP in the Canadian Premier League in 2019.
I suspect he'll probably be named it. It's what I love about it is that it's a teenager. It's a Canadian teenager that had the most goals in this league. And that's what you're looking for. That was the goal of this league. My fear, no offense to the foreign players that came in, but my fear kind of heading into this is that it would be dominated by them and that these kids, these Canadian kids, would be the role players. And that hasn't turned out to be the case. The Canadians have been the key players to the best teams in this league. And that is what we were hoping for heading in. And that's my thoughts on it. Tristan Borges, I think, probably will get another shot at Europe. He's just, like I said, he's a teenager. He's got a certain aspects to his game that I think he has to do a little bit better. But I've spoke to people about him a couple times this year, people on the technical side of the game, to ask him about his ceiling. And I get varying responses, but they all agree it's higher than this. And they also agree that he's probably more inclined to go Europe than to try and wait for an MLS contract. And we also don't really know how MLS is going to deal with KNPL in terms of their willingness to pay transfers. And that's going to be something very interesting to watch play out because the MLS teams might just wait till they get unfreeze and take them that way, which is something MLS has done historically with USL players. So I would imagine they might look at it the same way. But with Borges, I know another year in the KNPL wouldn't be the worst thing, but I do think at this point in time, he's probably eager to get to a bridge league in Europe. By that, I mean, I think he's already played in the Dutch a bit. So I would say that if he
could
get
Portugal or something,
you know, in Portugal, I think would be a very good opportunity for him. If he could get to like a mid table level there. I don't think he's big three in Portugal quite yet.
Yeah, no.
Wouldn't play there.
That's true.
But Belgium is really comes through. That's the one league that constantly comes up when you're talking with these Canadian kids. And it's because the level's right, but also because there's a lot of contacts in Belgium. It's not a fluke. The guys like Jonathan and David and ended up there, or Kyle Larin ended up getting there and getting a second chance there after he left Turkey. There are a few people, particularly a few people in the sphere of those players I just mentioned, that have really good contacts in Belgium. So that's where I would watch the closest when it comes to Borges, and it would be, I think, a good fit. I've also heard France even. That he might be good enough to hook on at a Ligue 1 lower table side. And any of this would be great. It's all gravy at this point. France is the other league I've heard a lot with Borges in the sense that might be his ceiling, that he might one day be able to play in a decent Ligue 1 side. We'll see. I mean, this is all speculation at this point, but the fact that we're able to speculate is fun. And that's, you know, I think of all these years, we reported with the KNPL in theory. Now we're talking about the KNPL in terms of a player moving on from it. And that's the dream. It's been fulfilled. We don't need to worry about it anymore. There's no more firsts, and that's a positive that we don't have to talk about, oh, isn't this exciting? It's happening. We can now maybe hopefully take it for granted that it happens moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll continue to take a look on the awards and when they trickle down in the next few days from the Canadian Premier League. But MLS Cup is this Sunday, and we'll transition and pivot to MLS Cup for the rest of the weeks. We'll have some coverage live from Seattle. We'll get our correspondent to check in with us and let us know what's happening in Seattle from a Toronto perspective, from a Seattle perspective, but more importantly, from a soccer perspective, because this is Soccer Today after all. Thanks for your follow, for your subscription. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast to get your daily dose of Dwayne and I talking about the beautiful game. And make sure you go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access right now to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast in the $2 tier, the 2S tier. 4 shows a month, one every week, that dives deep in Canadian soccer from every perspective, from the Canadian Premier League to the Canadian men's national team, women's national team, to even U Sports, which we will talk about tomorrow. The U Sports men's final will happen this weekend in Montreal, the finals themselves, from the 7th to the 10th. At the Sepsum University of Montreal. But until tomorrow, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We wish you, as always, a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.